की जय, श्री श्री कृष्ण बलराम की जय, श्री श्री राधा श्याम सुंदर की जय, श्री श्री गौर निताय की जय, श्रीमद् भगवद गीता की जय, निताय गौर प्रेमानंदे, ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरी टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय. रीडिंग फ्रॉम भगवद गीता चैप्टर 5, कर्म योग एक्शन इन कृष्ण कॉन्शियसनेस, टेक्स्ट 19. इह एव तैः जितः सर्गः येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्मान् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः.
सर्गो
येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म तस्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म स्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. लेडीज, माताजीस्, इहैव तैर्जितः सर्गो येषां साम्ये स्थितं मनः निर्दोषं हि समं ब्रह्म स्माद् ब्रह्मणि ते स्थिताः. इह इन दिस लाइफ एव सर्टेनली तैः बाय देम जितः कॉन्कर्ड सर्गः बर्थ एंड डेथ येषां whose samye in equanimity sthitam situated, manaha, mind, nirdosham, flawless, he, certainly, samam, in equanimity, brahma, like the supreme, tasmat, therefore, brahmani, in the supreme, te, they, sthitah, are situated. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Translation: those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Purport: equanimity of mind, as mentioned above, is the sign of self-realization. Those who have actually attained to such a stage should be considered to have conquered material conditions, especially birth and death, specifically birth and death. As long as one identifies with this body, he is considered a conditioned soul. But as soon as he is elevated to the stage of equanimity through realization of self, he is liberated from conditional life. In other words, he is no longer subject to take birth in the material world, but can enter into the spiritual sky after his death. The Lord is flawless because he is without attraction or hatred. Similarly, when a living entity is without attraction or hatred, he also becomes flawless and eligible to enter into the spiritual sky. Such persons are to be considered already liberated, and their symptoms are described below. Kindly repeat the translation. Those whose minds are established in sameness and equanimity have already conquered the conditions of birth and death. They are flawless like Brahman, and thus they are already situated in Brahman. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahim Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guruho Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padang Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So Krishna has been describing in these few verses, and he will continue to describe the situation of a person who is transcendentally absorbed. One major difference between the material and the spiritual realms is that when one is on the material realm, one is situated in duality, and when one's mind is spiritually situated, then one's mind or one's consciousness becomes equipoised. It is in sameness and equanimity. This duality appears in so many different forms in this material world: happiness and distress, honor and dishonor, pain and pleasure, heat and cold, fame and infamy, praise and blame. So this world is a world of dualities at every stage. And by instinct, conditioned souls tend to work towards that aspect of the duality that satisfies their senses. Therefore we see that in the cold of winter we like the sun. So we all move towards the sun or some object that is hot. Whereas the same sun becomes an object to avoid in the summer season. So it's not that there is some intrinsic quality in an object that makes it pleasurable or not pleasurable. It all has to do with one's approach to it. How does the mind react to the world around it? So if the mind is absorbed in material things, then naturally it will always try to work towards that which is comfortable to the senses. And it will try to avoid those things that are uncomfortable. So this means there is a big struggle. The struggle is there because the material nature is always trying to impart or give to us undesirable, displeasing situations. Whether we like it or not, it gets too hot sometimes, it gets too cold sometimes. Whether we like it or not, sometimes we are blamed, sometimes we are insulted. So displeasing circumstances happen all the time. Therefore, the life of the living entity in the material world is constantly a life of struggle, shuttling between the two aspects of duality, pleasurable and unpleasurable. And usually, we observe that if you want to get happiness in something, then you must be absorbed in that thing. Observe how a small child plays with a toy or a small child eats food. We will see that the child is completely absorbed in that activity and therefore is able to take a lot of pleasure from that activity. It is our experience also that when absorption in a particular activity reduces, then the pleasure also reduces. Suppose there's a wonderful plate of prasadam in front of us. And if our mind is disturbed or absorbed in something else, then we will not really enjoy the prasadam. Our mind will be somewhere and almost mechanically we will eat the prasadam. We may recognize something is nice to taste, but we will really not have all the pleasure that would normally have gone with it had our mind been completely absorbed in that prasadam. Then we could have relished every morsel. So the principle is that the more we are absorbed in something, the more pleasure we can get out of it. And the same principle applies in the spiritual realm. That if one is completely absorbed in spiritual matters, then one becomes completely happy. The problem with being absorbed on the platform of matter, however, is that any absorption in matter, any activity in matter, gives rise to distress, sooner or later. And therefore, absorption in matter only intensifies the struggle of the living entity in this world of dualities. It doesn't solve the matter problem. It only increases, aggravates the struggle and the problem. So therefore, the first step in self-realization, or rather, the first step which needs to be cultivated but is attained at a stage of perfection, is freedom from the dualities. To be situated in sameness and equanimity. And that is possible in this life. Because Krishna says, iha means here, in this life. Eva certainly, by them, taihi, sargaha, jitaha sargaha. Jita means conquered. And sarga means this creation, specifically referring to birth and death. Ye sham, of those people, samya sthitam manaha. Manaha means mind, sthitam means situated. Samya means in equanimity. So for those people whose minds are situated in sameness and equanimity, for them, they have certainly conquered sarga, this creation, this material nature of birth and death. Jitaha sargaha. And when that happens, then we understand that person is nirdosham, is flawless. Samam Brahma, just like the spiritual Brahman, just like the absolute truth. Tasmat Brahmani te sthitaha. And therefore such people are already situated, sthitaha, in Brahman, on the spiritual platform. Even though they may be here in this material world, but they are spiritually, transcendentally situated. And therefore they are considered liberated. Such a person is called a Jivan Mukta, who is liberated even though he is still alive in this material body. In other words, the mind can be situated in sameness or equanimity if it is controlled. The nature of the mind is to be not controlled, to be uncontrolled. So all spiritual aspirants, indeed anyone seeking happiness, must try to control the mind. And when we control the mind, then half the battle is over, more than half. Almost the whole battle is over. The mind itself helps us when it is controlled. Therefore, in the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions some very important verses. He says, Bandhur atmatmanastasya yenatmaivatmana jitah anatmanastu shatrutve vartetatmaiva shatruvat. For one who has conquered the mind becomes the best friend. And for one who has not conquered the mind becomes one's worst enemy. And if one has controlled one's mind, then what happens? A similar thing is mentioned in the next verse, as we see in today's verse here. Jitatmanah prashantasya paramatma samahitah. Shitoshna sukhadukheshu tatha manapa manayoho. Krishna says, when the person's mind is controlled, jita atmanaha prashantatma, then one becomes the controller of oneself. And indeed, jita atmanaha prashantasya paramatma samahita. So one approaches or one reaches the paramatma in the heart. One has approached the Lord. One gets the qualification to approach the Lord. Otherwise, a person situated in duality is far away from the Lord. Although the Lord is very close to him, but he is far away from the Lord, because his mind and senses do not permit him access to the Lord. But when the mind is situated in equanimity, jitatmanaha, so when the manaha has been conquered, jitaha, prashantasya, one becomes very peaceful, very calm. Not just shanta, prashanta. Prakrishta rupena shantaha iti prashantaha. So one is especially peaceful, one becomes, when one controls the mind. And paramatma, or the Lord in the heart, is obtained, is attained. Shita ushna sukha dukkhadaha. So one becomes equal in heat and cold. Shita means cold, ushna means hot. Sukha dukkheshu, in happiness and distress. Tatha mana apamana yohu, and also in honor and dishonor. So what does it mean to be situated in sameness? These are some examples. One becomes free even from the concept of honor and dishonor, which is something very important for people in this world. Jnana vijnana triptatma kutastho vijitendriya yukta ityuchyate yogi samaloshtrashma kanchanaha. And then he says, the person becomes satisfied, the transcendentalist is satisfied by jnana and vijnana, not only by theoretical knowledge, but also by experience of that, by realized knowledge. Triptatma, kutasthaha, becomes completely spiritually situated. Vijita indriyaha, his senses also become completely conquered. Yukta iti uchyate yogi, he is completely absorbed, engaged. Such a yogi, sama loshtra अश्मा कांचनः, ही सीज अ स्टोन और अ पेबल और गोल्ड ऑल टू बी द सेम. सो दिस इज व्हाट इट मीन्स प्रैक्टिकली टू सी दैट, दैट वेदर सम देयर इज अ गोल्ड बिस्किट और वेदर देयर इज अ स्टोन, वी सी इट इक्वली, बिकॉज इट्स ऑल मैटर, इट्स नॉट स्पिरिट. सुहृन् मित्रारुदासीन बंधुषु द्वेष्यषु साधुष्वपि च पापेषु बुद्धिर्सम विशिष्यते. सो कृष्ण एक्सप्लेन्स दैट फर्दर ऑल्सो वन सीज सुहृत, दैट इज वन्स वेल विशर, मित्र वन्स फ्रेंड और बेनिफैक्टर, अरि इज वन्स एनिमी, उदासीन वन हु इज न्यूट्रल और वन हु इज इंडिफरेंट टू आवर इंटरेस्ट्स, मध्यस्थ द्वेष्य बंधुषु, मध्यस्थ मीन्स वन हु इज अ काइंड ऑफ मीडिएटर बिटवीन टू बेलिजरेंट्स, द्वेष्य वन हु इज एनवियस ऑफ अस, बंधुषु वन हु मे बी आवर रिलेटिव और फ्रेंड, साधुषु अपि च पापेषु इवन द सेंटली पर्सन एंड द सिनर, सम बुद्धिर विशिष्यते. So a transcendentalist who is situated in equanimity sees all these different categories of people also in that way. We have seen in yesterday's verse, this very famous verse, Vidya Vinaya Sampanne Brahmane Gavihastini Shuni Chaiva Shvapakecha Pandita Samadarshana. So this concept of Samadarshanaha is further elaborated by Krishna in various places in the Gita. And also in the succeeding verses, Krishna is going to talk about that. So in this way, we see that a transcendentally situated person not only sees objects equally, he sees people equally, living entities equally, and situations, circumstances equally. Therefore, in all respects, that such a person's vision is completely spiritual. The different categories of transcendentalists, they differently respond or they differently behave on the platform of sameness. Those who are after the impersonal Brahman, the Jnana Yogis, the Brahmavadis, they understand that everything is situated in Brahman. The Paramatmavadis, those who follow the path of Ashtanga Yoga, they understand that ultimately the Paramatma, the Lord in the heart, the Super Soul, is the controller of everything and everyone. He is the one who awards the reactions to our karma. And therefore, everything that is happening to us is by His will, under His sanction. And therefore, they get tremendous power by this understanding to withstand unpleasant situations. Yam labha chaparam labam manyate nadhikam tatah यस्मिन् स्थितोन दुखेन गुरुणापि विचाल्यते. यस्मिन् स्थितः न दुखेन गुरुण अपि, गुरु मीन्स वेरी हेवी. इफ दैट दुख और दैट मिजरी और द डिफिकल्ट सिचुएशन इज ऑल्सो वेरी हेवी, अ वेरी डिफिकल्ट सिचुएशन कम्स, न विचाल्यते, इट डजंट बिकम डिस्टर्ब बाय दैट, बिकॉज सच अ योगी अंडरस्टैंड्स इट्स ऑल हैपनिंग अंडर द विद द सैंक्शन ऑफ द लॉर्ड. The Lord in the heart is orchestrating everything. So it becomes peaceful. Coming to a higher stage, the devotee of the Lord understands that not only is everything situated on the spiritual platform ultimately, because even matter comes from spirit, not only is the Lord in the heart the sanctioner and the witness of everything, and not only is everything happening by His sanction, but furthermore, actually, everything that is happening to me is His kindness, is His mercy upon me. So the devotee sees every act that happens to him as an act of love, of an all-loving Supreme Personality of Godhead trying to rectify, purify His devotee. And therefore, the devotee is able to take all situations, whether so-called pleasant or unpleasant, everything as a mercy of the Lord, as a love of the Lord. So the devotee never complains. Sometimes a devotee who is very advanced may complain but in a mood of intimacy. But still nevertheless, that happens only when the love is very, very intense. We can see there are many, many examples of great saintly personalities who demonstrated this power of being in equanimity, of being completely absorbed. That situation is called samadhi. For example, when Parikshit Maharaj was traveling in the forest and he became very thirsty and he approached the nearest ashram he could find, and there was a sage Shamik Rishi who was completely in samadhi, absorbed in transcendence in his own meditation. Shamik Rishi was not on the platform of the external world. He was situated in the internal spiritual world, and therefore he did not notice the emperor coming into his ashram. Normally, even a great saint would stand up and receive respectfully the emperor of the earth, especially an emperor who is as qualified and devout and spiritually situated as Maharaj Parikshit. Shamik Rishi would certainly have received him in the proper way had he realized it. But because he was absorbed in samadhi, so he did not know that Maharaj Parikshit had come. Maharaj Parikshit, on the other hand, being guided by the Lord within, his mind was somehow bewildered in such a way for the Lord's higher purpose, so that eventually the Srimad Bhagavatam would be spoken, to actually take offense at the lack of hospitality shown by Shamik Rishi. So, in great anger, he picked up a dead snake that was lying on the ground somewhere with a stick and put it around the neck of Shamik Rishi. And even when Shamik Rishi came to know much later from his son Sringi that Sringi had cursed the king, having come to know of what the king had done to his father, Shamik Rishi was very sorry, not at what the king had done, but at what his son had done. And he admonished his son very severely. And personally, Shamik Rishi went to the king and apologized very profusely and said, "I'm extremely sorry. My foolish boy has done this. And you are such a great devotee, such an exalted personality, an emperor of the earth and the representative of God. And my foolish son has cursed you to die in 7 days. I was somehow in samadhi. I was in meditation. I could not understand that you had come." Parikshit Maharaj would never have done this had it not been the Lord's arrangement or the Lord's desire. Because Parikshit Maharaj was still not very old. He was still a young man. And he could easily have ruled for many, many years more. He was in good health, good vigor. His mind was sharp. Everything was going well and strongly in his kingdom. So Krishna wanted the rest of posterity, all the humanity to come to benefit. So he arranged this. So we can understand from Shamik Rishi's situation that even though such a tremendous thing had happened in his life because of him, he never took offense. Similarly, there was Indradumna Maharaj, who also retired to the forest after handing over the kingdom to his son. And he was also absorbed in his devotional service, in his divine meditation, when the sage Agastya came. Agastya is also sometimes known for his hot temper. And when Agastya Muni also was not received properly, then he also cursed Indradumna Maharaj, that because you are behaving like an animal, so I curse that you will become an elephant in your next life. And then the same Indradumna Maharaj, he became Gajendra. And then we have the wonderful pastime of Gajendra's liberation. So ultimately that was also the Lord's desire to quickly promote Indradumna Maharaj to the spiritual world and to glorify him so that his story would be immortalized in the Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures. So we see that equanimity of mind is something that comes by absorption in something higher than matter. Absorption in matter will never give us equanimity. So anyone who has acquired equanimity is always because that person has been situated mentally on a higher platform of spirit, whether it's a Brahmavadi, Paramatmavadi or a devotee of the Lord. But it's something transcendental. Of course, the devotee of the Lord is ultimately on the highest platform because Krishna is the source of Brahman. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, the Lord is flawless because He is without attraction or hatred. And therefore such a person becomes also flawless and just like the Lord. Samoham sarvabhuteshu namidvishyo sthina priyaha. Krishna explains, I am equal to everyone. I don't favor somebody, neither am I averse to somebody. Krishna is equally disposed to all living entities because all living entities are ultimately parts and parcels of His own Self. So Krishna, being so transcendentally situated, becomes completely neutral. And the devotee or the transcendentalist who absorbs himself on the spiritual platform also becomes similarly flawless. Of course, this doesn't mean that the Lord or a devotee on the transcendental platform even are like stone. There is also place for transcendental emotion. In the spiritual planets, there is emotion. There is mellow, that is called ras. This exchange of mellow is called the bhakti ras. Exchange of devotional sentiment between the Lord and His devotee. This is bhakti ras and is beautifully described by Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. But nevertheless, that is on the spiritual platform completely. So then Srila Prabhupada concludes the purport by saying that when a person becomes transcendental to the dualities, he becomes flawless, then he is qualified to enter into the spiritual sky. So that is our minimum qualification. Beyond that, there is much more to achieve. There is pure devotion to achieve. Without pure devotion, one cannot enter into the spiritual world, onto the spiritual planets. But even those who are Brahmavadis can enter into the spiritual sky, into the impersonal Brahman, even if they have no devotion. But still, the minimum that they need to achieve is freedom from the dualities. Brahma-bhuta prasannatma. So they are situated on the Brahma-bhuta stage. And in the verses to come, we will now hear more about the different qualities that such a person, a self-realized soul, can manifest, by which he becomes flawless and situated in Brahman. So we'll stop here. Any other questions or comments? Yes.
Then how is it possible for a human being to have free will and moral agency? My question would be, if you have to go through all this to reach the Lord, what happens to the spontaneous joyousness of the cowherd, of Krishna? Doesn't it lead to a sort of brahminical ritualism instead of that joyfulness? But the first question is,
if the Lord is doing everything, then how come there is anything like free will? Well, there are different stages of doership. there are three levels of doers. The first stage is the living entity. We ourselves are doers, in one sense. The second level of doership is the level of material nature. And the third level of doership is the Supreme Lord Himself. Now, the living entity of the soul has no power to act. The living entity only has power to desire. For the fulfillment of the desire, the living entity is dependent upon material nature. Without material nature's cooperation, the living entity cannot act within this world. However, material nature also is not independent. Material nature is also working strictly under the superintendence of Krishna, as Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita. Mayadhyakshena prakritihi suyate sacharacharam. So then, where do these different roles fit in? If nothing can happen without Krishna's will or His sanction, then we can say Krishna is the ultimate doer. But there is something called the immediate cause, something called the intermediate cause, and something called the remote or the ultimate cause. So the living entity is the immediate cause, material nature is the intermediate cause, and Krishna is the ultimate cause. So depending on the desire of the living entity, Krishna fulfills. And therefore Krishna acts through material nature, which is one of His energies, and then the material nature facilitates the fulfillment of that desire. So therefore, the living entity is also implicated in the reaction to that action, because that action has taken place by virtue of his or her desire. Because a living entity so desires, a particular thing happens. Therefore, the living entity is implicated. The Lord, however, is completely aloof. He simply fulfills the desires. But He is not implicated in the reactions of those actions. No, He is omnipotent, but the living entity's only function or the only power is to desire. Yes. No, you don't exactly call it Leela, because a Leela is when Krishna does something of His own sweet will, when He does something to fulfill His own purposes. But when the living entity desires to act differently from the will of the Lord, yes, the Lord controls. No, there is one thing that is greater than the power of omnipotence, and that is love. Because out of love, the Lord does not control the desires of the living entity. Because otherwise there is no meaning to love. The essential relationship between the Lord and the jiva or the soul is a relationship of love. But love cannot be forced by omnipotency. For example, a parent cannot tell the child with a gun, "You must love me and serve me." The child, or anyone for that matter, has to voluntarily offer that love. So even though the Supreme Lord has the power to change everyone's desire, He has the power to make everyone love Him, but He doesn't exercise that option in that way. He will wait till that particular jiva has developed such a desire. Then He will facilitate that desire and help the jiva progress on the path of pure love of Godhead. So Krishna does not interfere with the minute independence of the jiva. That is love. Because He is supremely independent, the jiva by nature is also independent, but minutely so. So the jiva also inherits, so to speak, the free will that Krishna has. So Krishna doesn't interfere with the individual expression of that free will. He facilitates that. At the same time, in the material world, he sends his scriptures, he sends his holy, saintly representatives who guide the conditioned souls of how to act and how not to act, of how to make their actions conform to the Lord's will. Those conditioned souls who are intelligent, they listen to these instructions, dovetail their actions along according to the Lord's will, they make progress and go back to Godhead and make their life successful. Those who do not, then they suffer. They have to remain here in this world of birth and death, and they don't escape till such time as they change their rebellious mentality. So there is no contradiction between the omnipotency of the Lord and the fact that the living entities have their own desire, because the Lord doesn't interfere with the desire of the living entity. So the only thing the living entity can do practically is desire. Even for the fulfillment of the desire, the living entity is completely dependent on the Lord and the Lord's energy, material nature. Or at a higher level, the spiritual nature. We can think of an example. Srila Prabhupada mentioned this one time. Let's take a simple example. Suppose there is a man who is a weightlifter. He goes to the Olympic Games and he lifts these very huge weights. And he has his practice sessions in his gymnasium, which is in his house. He also has a small child, small boy. And he sees these huge weights there. And he says, I'm going to lift them. But of course, he's so tiny, he can't possibly lift them. But nevertheless, he goes and clasps that big weight and tries to lift. The father is standing behind. He's very merciful. He says, oh, my son wants to lift it. It's completely impossible for him. He can never do it. So he goes from behind. The child doesn't see it. And he lifts it. And the child thinks, oh, it's happening because of me. I'm lifting it. And the weight is up. And the child thinks, yes, I've done it. I'm so powerful. I am the doer. I have lifted. But smiling behind him is the father. Because now he is fulfilling the desire of this child. So also the living entity desires something. The living entity doesn't have the power to fulfill it. But the Lord is there seated in the heart. He says, okay, you want to do this? Fine, come on, we'll do it. So the Lord does it through material nature. The living entity thinks, I have done it. So that's the problem. But at the same time, the living entity has a role to play. Because if he hadn't desired, the Lord wouldn't have come forward to help him in that way. And because of that desire, the living entity is rewarded or punished. So the Lord is there to fulfill. And that's what the Upanishads say. The Lord is there to fulfill the desires of the living entity from time immemorial. So is that okay? Question is answered? Yes, that's desire. Decisions means desire. So we have the power, we have the freedom to desire, but we don't have the power to act. For the power, we need power from the all-powerful, Krishna. When he gives the power, then our desire can be fulfilled. So ethics or decision-making is a function of desire. I desire this. I think like this. These are my values, these are my ethics. But ultimately, if I have to implement, I need the help of the Lord. So the free will is there, it's not something dry. We desire, but because we cannot control material nature, we are dependent on the Lord to help us to fulfill our desires. And as far as the second question, your second question was about the joyfulness of... No, it's fine. I have ended the class early for more questions, so we have time. Yes, that's a good point. Therefore, later on in that verse, Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna will say, Brahma Bhuta Prasannatma Na Shochati Na Kangshati Samaha Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Labhate Param. Where Krishna says that, okay, now you have come to the spiritual platform, the Brahma Bhuta platform. Now begin, now you're qualified to really start doing bhakti, to serve the Lord. And discover the real joy of spiritual life. Because I already mentioned these three stages, the Brahman, the Paramatma, and Bhagavan. So the Jnana Yogis, the Ashtanga Yogis, and the devotees, they are situated on three different platforms of transcendence, of spirituality. All three are on the spiritual platform. But there is a progression from inferior to superior. The Brahmavadis, their life is dry, is devoid of spiritual sentiment, ras. The Paramatmavadis have a glimmer of it, but not much. But the devotee is simply floating in the mood of spontaneous joy and love that you have mentioned. So, depending on the particular mentality of the transcendentalist, one is situated in one of these three categories. The Brahmavadi and the Paramatmavadi can also become devotees if they associate with devotees. Otherwise not, it's difficult. They will continue to take their respective destinations, which is the impersonal liberation in the spiritual sky. But for the devotees, they are destined to associate with Krishna in a joyful mood, as you have mentioned here, of spontaneous love in Vrindavan or in the Vaikuntha planets. So they are destined for that kind of personal interaction. So here we are just reading some fundamental principles of the nature of this material world and how real happiness cannot come unless one transcends the world of duality and situates oneself at least on a platform of neutrality. But devotional service to Lord Krishna is so wonderful that one doesn't have to make separate efforts for renunciation of this sort. Therefore, Srila Rupa Goswami has said, Iha yasi harir dasye karmana manasagira niklashvapyavasthasu jivan mukta sa uchyate. He says that if one is living his life completely dedicated as a servant of Lord Hari or Lord Krishna, Iha yasya harir dasye, in a mood of servitude or mood of service, loving service to Krishna, and is dovetailing his or her karmana, that is actions, manasa, the mind and the thoughts, gira, the words, then one is completely on the spiritual platform and is called a jivan mukta, fully liberated soul. So even though one may not have gone through the motions of austerities and penances and other things that are required, the study of the Vedas and so many things that are required for those on the path of Gyan and Ashtanga Yoga. The devotee simply by rendering service to Krishna in so many different ways, beginning with hearing and chanting of his names, such a devotee can easily make rapid advancement and attain to this platform of spontaneous love and joy, which is the spirit of Vrindavan. Any other questions or comments? Yes. No, Shami Krishi was of course completely unaware of this whole thing happening because he was absorbed in his own meditation. It was Sringi, his son, who came to know and who became outraged. And as I mentioned, Parikshit Maharaj, he was such a great exalted soul, there is no way that he could have done this kind of thing in normal circumstances. It is only by the prompting of the Lord in the heart, because the Lord had a special purpose to fulfill through Parikshit Maharaj. So he induced him from within the heart to act in this way, which was completely unusual for Parikshit Maharaj to do. He would never have done it ordinarily. So this was possible by the inducement of the Lord within the heart. And what was the earlier part you mentioned? How does a person who is transcendentally situated react when the body, when his or her body is in danger? It depends. There are different examples in history. Someone like Ambarish Maharaj, for example, was so that when Durvasa Muni created this demon, Rakshas, out of his hair, then he didn't even move an inch. He didn't cry or shout. He just remembered Krishna and stood there silently, understanding that if this is Krishna's body, if Krishna wants to destroy, he may do. It's his property. Similarly, Prahlad Maharaj was completely undisturbed when his father tried to kill him in so many ways, even though Prahlad was only a small boy of 5 years. But his consciousness was very, very advanced. On the other hand, you may find among the Pandavas, Krishna urged Yudhishthir Maharaj that you must avenge the irreligious act that has been done against all of you. You have to fight to get your kingdom back. Draupadi, when she was, the attempted disrobing was going on, she cried out for help. But that is not a flaw, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. So even if a devotee cries out for some help in times of emergency where the body is in grave danger of being destroyed, then that is not a flaw. However, one should not be in a habit of asking or fulfilling material desires from the Lord again and again for every small thing to approach the Lord. That gives a fruitive mentality. But if in times of emergency and there's a drastic situation and our life is endangered in great threat and we call out to the Lord for help, well, it is not a fault. Because our ultimate goal is only to serve and love Krishna. But ordinarily, a devotee doesn't like to trouble Krishna for every small thing. And is content with what Krishna sends. Okay, so we'll stop here. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Premanande.